This is the final whistle on Ocean FM as Red Oak Murphy's second anniversary passes. His parents want to keep the conversation about mental health going. We'll hear about a special event they're organising next month in Sligo Town. Plus, the first heavyweight clash of this year's football championship takes us to Celtic Park this weekend. Paddy McGill will chew on the possibilities with a Derry man and a Donegal man on the Donegal GAA podcast. Welcome to the programme. This is Austin O'Callaghan. We're on 083 3500 530 by WhatsApp and text. sport@oceanfm.ie is the email address, and you'll get us on X or Twitter as well. At Ocean FM Sport is the Twitter handle. Well, it's now 2 years since Sligo Gaelic footballer Red Oak Murphy died by suicide. His anniversary was at the beginning of this month. Since his death, it's been important to Red Oak's parents, Redmond and Geraldine, and his brothers Oisin and Thahi, that mental health becomes a more widespread topic among young people. As part of the family's efforts to keep the issue to the forefront of people's minds, they're organising a public event in Summerhill College in Sligo on Friday the 24th of May. It will be an evening about mental health, and the panel of speakers has been especially chosen. As Red Oak's life was immersed in sport, the mental health journey of high-level sports people are the particular focus here. The panel of speakers will include Alan Quinlan, the former Munster and Ireland rugby player and mental health advocate, Philly McMahon, former Dublin footballer, mental health and resilience speaker, Caroline Currid, Sligo native and one of Ireland's foremost sports psychologists, and Rory O'Connor, the man behind Rory Stories, comedian and mental health advocate. Now, this will be a free event, and details on how to register your interest in attending are available online. The aim of the evening is to give people hope. It's for the young people of Sligo and beyond, whether they're involved in sport or not. It's for parents too, and anybody who thinks it might be useful to their situation. Geraldine and Redmond Murphy have been talking to Ocean FM Sport about this event and about how they are doing as a family following the second anniversary of Red Oak's death.
We're not too bad. We're doing well. Ger and I and the boys. Life is different. There's no doubt about that. Life is different. And it's very much one day at a time. And if it was possible, it probably brought the family closer together, the four of us. In the sense that Red Oak is with us every day and every hour of every day. And we see him in the butterflies and the robins and different things. But he's with us every day spiritually, but just that we can hug him or kiss him, but we're doing okay.
Is it a comfort, Ger, that you feel he is around you every day?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't believe like going to the cemetery every day is where he is. I feel he's with me us around the house, and you get the little signs and whatever, but like people say, you go away on trips and whatever, but I say we carry him in our hearts, so he's with us wherever we go.
Is it getting easier, folks?
I would say it doesn't get any easier, but that you learn to cope with it. And I mean, people might probably say, oh, look at them off there with their smile, they're doing well and whatever. Yes, we are doing well, but you have to think of everybody else, the boys, the other two boys. And as we always say, life has to go on. So you do the best you can every day. You get up out of bed, put on your makeup and get out there, because that's what Red Oak would want. He wouldn't want one to be mulling and dwelling in the past. So like we try and do the best we can every day. And that's the way we work from day to day.
You've just passed his second anniversary.
Yes, and that was quite difficult. It wasn't an easy one. I think the second Christmas, the second anniversary, was a lot more difficult than the first time round. But like, people have been very, very supportive yet again, like the crowds that were there at his second anniversary Mass. Unbelievable. And we thank people for that too. They're there behind us all the way.
And if it's not too personal, why was the second anniversary more difficult?
We don't know. People say that, you know, the second anniversary is more difficult. It's hard to rationalise it. It's difficult to be able to pinpoint that something is different. Maybe it's just that for 2 years he's longer gone from us, and that, you know, we miss him more. We don't know. It's something we can't
explain.
But following the Mass and the lovely Mass, the anniversary Mass, the next day we were up and off again, you know. We were back to normal. It was leading into the anniversary Mass, that, or into the Christmas, that kind of is the tough times. When you pass it, then you seem to get that comfort again, you know.
I see you out at matches. I see you around County Sligo at different functions. You know. We see the Murphy clan.
Yeah, but
seemingly immersed in life.
Yeah, but that's the way we always were, so we'll continue that way. As I said, Red Oak would never want us to stop at home being mulling over what happened to him. We go, and yeah, we love the Gaelic, we love sport, and yeah, off we go. And as I say, life is for living, and that's what we intend to do.
Redmond, where did the idea for this night in Summerhill College in Sligo on the 24th of May come from?
I think, you know, Red Oak, what his positive way about, you know, he was a good lad, and he always wanted to do good to people. He always wanted to do the right thing. He had time for people. As we go on, we feel that, you know, he wants us to do something positive. He wants us to it seems like he's telling us every day, he's behind us, that, look, go out there, do something good, do something positive, you know, help the young people, or, you know, make from a very difficult situation to bring something very positive out of it. And, you know, to be able to think or believe that we've saved one life with the loss of Red Oak, that's good enough for us. That's really good enough for us. And he's there going, go on, Dad and Mam, go on.
He's kind of coaching you from the sidelines.
Yeah. We believe that. Yeah. We're doing his work now.
Okay. And that's the motivation for this evening, which will be an evening of stories, of chat, of discussion. Who is this evening for, Redmond?
The other point, I suppose, I'd like to make is that the day I would have met Alan Quinlan at my workplace, and he had told his story, and his story really resonated to help us maybe a little bit understand how Red was feeling, what had happened that infamous night, you know. And he said, he's parting words with me, said, Red, if you're ever doing anything up the Northwest, I'll help you. And that triggered something in our heads that he was there to help us if we needed it. So the night itself is no doubt about it. It's for people that struggle with mental health. It's for the young. It's for the parents that have lost the young. It's for the wider community. It's anybody that's struggling with mental health, especially the young. It's especially for the young that, you know, to give them some light at the end of the tunnel. To hear the stories that of these powerful speakers, you know, their story gives hope to that there is light, there is help out there, there is, and you know, you move on, you get, you know, you're treated, you get the help, and life comes back a little bit to normal again, you know. That it's not the end of the world when you think Red Oak was sitting there that particular night and said, now, this is it, like, I can't go on. But there is help, and it's the hope that comes with that help.
You've mentioned one of the speakers who's going to be talking on the night, the former Munster and Ireland rugby player, Alan Quinlan. The Dublin footballer, Philly McMahon, will be another speaker. Caroline Currid, who's well known in Sligo sporting circles, will be there on the night. And so too will be the man best known as Rory Stories Ger. somebody that Red admired from a
he really enjoyed Rory Stories. So hopefully that will hit home with a lot of the young people as well. But as Robin said, it's not just young. I mean, it's their parents as well that we would like to see coming and to hear all these stories. Because with Alan Quinlan, I didn't actually meet him in Dublin, but when Robin came and explained and told me his story, I mean, it was the first time that I could actually slot it in with what happened to Red Oak. I put Red Oak right into his boots and picture like the same thing going on in Red Oak's mind. And I got great comfort from listening to that story. So that's why I think it's important that people do hear all these stories and see what help is out there, and that there is hope at the end of the day.
I'm struck by what you said there, Redmond. You could hear Red Oak in what Alan Quinlan had to say.
Yeah, it seemed to answer the unanswered questions to that point. You know, he talked about how he struggles through what were the highlights of his career in his sport. And that, you know, Father Leo said the day of the funeral, and I always remembered, he said, it's okay not to feel okay. And I think Alan and others, speakers on the night, will resonate that, you know, even though all of the struggles they had, and they felt so bad at times, but still they're here to tell the story, they've sought help, and they've continued with life.
Okay. This is going to be a free event on the night for the public to come along and see. Ger, I get that impression you want to make this as easy as possible for people to attend.
Absolutely, yeah. Just to encourage, there's no charge whatsoever on it, and that might, you know, help such people who can't afford to come or whatever. But I mean, it's just, yeah, we want to encourage everybody to come to it. So there's absolutely no charge on it.
Yeah, people will be invited to register online just for numbers for the venue itself. How do you think this might help the Murphy family, Redmond, an event like this?
There is no doubt, in either of our minds that one life saved, if that night means one more life is saved, that's a positive, huge uplift for us. Because even though, as I said, it's a tragedy for us as a family, but if we think like that we've saved one life, there's a comfort in that, you know, that another family won't go through what we've gone through. And that's a very positive thing.
And to encourage people, Ger, to talk.
Yes, I do believe it's important for young people to talk. Even though Red Oak was the best talker you could find. I mean, he would talk about anything. And as I say, he would probably discuss things with me that another 21-year-old wouldn't be talking to their mother about. But look, that's just the relationship we had.
That is something I wanted to ask you finally. From talking to people who knew Red Oak intimately, whether in the sporting sphere or just in Kerry or in South Sligo or DCU or wherever it might have been, almost everybody I came across would say Red was a talker. He was a confider. He would come and tell us what's on his mind, which makes it all the more difficult for me, the outsider, to get my head around. Does that make sense?
Yes. It does make sense. But it's, and part of it is probably difficult for us to accept as to why he didn't speak to us. Obviously, he was covering something up that we didn't see. But yeah, he, as I said, he would talk, and he would talk everything out with us. But the mask, as I say, they have this mask, and they can cover it up very well.
To finish, Redmond, if you could give a message now, and I'm going to ask you to give a message to a 16-year-old boy or girl listening to this interview who maybe is finding life tough going at the moment, or maybe it's the mum or the dad or the granny or the granddad, what would you say, what might you say to encourage them to come along to this event?
It seems, when you have these thoughts, you protect these thoughts. So as a young person, you protect the thoughts with great effort. You put on a face to hide your concerns, your thoughts, your fears. The speakers that are there that will be talking to people all that night will have done something similar, in that they were afraid to talk, were afraid to chat with people, disclose their deepest thoughts. But something Colm said in the eulogy at the funeral, he said, how do you know that your thoughts are valid if somebody else hasn't heard them and, you know, give back feedback to you? How do you know they're valid? So if you talk to somebody or listen to the stories, that'll mean that you've got a second opinion on your deepest, scariest thoughts. And I think that's really good.
Redmond and Chair Murphy speaking to Ocean FM Sport. And a reminder that an evening about mental health will take place on Friday, the 24th of May, in Summerhill College in Sligo, beginning at 7:30. Admission is free, and the link to register your interest in going along is available online. Elsewhere, we've got two big football championship commentaries coming your way this Saturday on Ocean FM. Sligo against Galway in the Connacht Senior Football semi-final is live from Markovitch Park from 3:30, courtesy of Oates Breheny Group, your local property and mortgage expert. Colm McGee and Jerry McGann will be behind the microphones. And later at 6:15, we'll take you to Celtic Park for the Ulster Football quarter-final. Holders Derry against Donegal, Mickey Hart against Jim McGuinness. And the county rivalry has produced some great stories down through the years. Here's Paddy McGill and his guests on the Donegal GAA podcast to remind us.
Whistle, and Derry are the National Football League champions for 1995. Derry have defeated Donegal. Derry 12 points, Donegal 8 points. A 4-point victory for Derry. Donegal, who of course won the vocational skills title earlier here today, were hoping that they were going to have a grand double, but that wasn't to be.
Time again. Pick side, Tommy Land, to perfection. Land, for the second time, gets away from Quinn. Trying to get the shot on the left foot. Gets the shot in. The Donegal flies go up. Gary Coleman, a young man who steered Derry to an All-Ireland minor title. Gormley gets away for once. And here's Seamus Downey, a chance for Downey. Gets on the right foot. And hits the post. Certainly let off. Cassidy gets the shot in. Downey drills it the second time. Puts it in the net. And the lobby man shows his delight.
Is on the Ulster football final, the match that everybody, not alone in the province of Ulster, but indeed all over the country, has been talking about. And it's a day in which pure utter determination will win this Ulster title, because it's a terrible day in Clonus. We've had heavy rain and the pitch is in quite bad condition, to be honest with you.
Here's Togel, started prominently for 10 minutes. McGonigal is in here, and McGonigal has a chance now, and he's got a man inside, and it's Brawley. Here it is for Derry, and Derry may well have won the Ulster Championship. Joe Brawley has scored a goal and 2 points. The goal coming in injury time. And now in the presence of Her Excellency, the President of Ireland, Kieran McKeever lifts the Anglesell Cup. And Derry are once again the champions.
Here is Paddy McBrearty. He hasn't had his best afternoon. Hey, but he saves the best for last. McBrearty dissects the posts. The Donegal management team, they're up in arms on the far side. They're clenching their fists. The referee looks at his watch. Has Paddy McBrearty won it for Donegal? Derry need to get a shot, or they need to work a free. The full-time whistle has gone. Derry have been knocked out, and Donegal will play Tyrone in 7 days' time.
Okay, loads of memories there. Some good and definitely some bad, certainly from a Donegal point of view. Okay, welcome one and all to the show. Paddy McGill here. looking ahead to Derry versus Donegal in the opening round of the Ulster Senior Football Championship this Saturday at 6:15 in Celtic Park in the beautiful historic city of Derry. And if you're unable to watch the match, perhaps you're out and about, it's live on Ocean FM with Mark McHugh, Peter Campbell and myself, and we'll try and release the Donegal GAA podcast on Saturday night. I won't make any promises, it could be Sunday morning because it's going to be a really late one. Martin McIlhenny scored a point in Celtic Park, Derry, the last time these sides met in the championship way back in 2014. Hi, Martin. How's life? You probably don't even remember the score, do you?
Yes, Paddy, how's it going? I remember the game, all right. It was a hotly tipped game in Derry, Celtic Park, like, where Derry were kind of tipped to try and maybe take one over on us at home and all, but we got a good enough performance and we came out top that day and we ended up getting to the All-Ireland final that year. But it's a lovely venue in there in Celtic Park, you know, the stands right on top of the players and all. It's a really nice place to play, and I'm sure the both teams will be looking forward to the weekend. Like,
it's actually the only ground in Ulster, I know nobody cares about this, that I actually haven't commentated, and I've been in it loads of times. I've actually not commentated there. Donegal haven't played there a huge amount. We've either drawn Derry at home, or it's been Clonus, or there was league finals, obviously, in Croke Park. I would imagine, and I know a lot of Donegal fans, just to miss that game. They actually haven't been to Celtic Park that much at senior level. There's been a couple of minor under-21 games.
Yeah, I would say like all the time I was playing with Donegal, I would say that was the only time I actually played in it. You might have played the odd friendly, you know, when Derry was kind of different divisions in the league and that. But there was very few and far between the times you actually went into a championship game. And I always remember that there was a real humdinger of a game. And I really enjoyed the experience just playing in Celtic Park. It's so close to Donegal too. Look, we're at border county and you're all along the place there. And a lot of them are coming holidays here in Donegal, you know, to Downings and stuff, places like that there. So it was really hotly contested, but a really enjoyable place to go. Like, I would say it's one of the best places in Ulster for the championship matches.
To be completely honest, I'm a history teacher and I love Irish history. It's my favourite section. For me personally, if I was asked what's the coolest ground in the entire of Ireland I've been to most of them, one or two I haven't ticked off, I would say Celtic Park in Derry because of the historical aspect. You're looking down on the city. It's close. It's compact. And as you said, it's that proximity to Donegal. It's a class venue. I love it. I can't wait for Sunday because of the, you know, it's going to be packed and just the ambience surrounding. It's going to be phenomenal. If anybody's tuning in right throughout the country and you haven't been to Celtic Park, go there. It's a brilliant ground. Moving on, Ciarán O'Kane, Irish News, our next guest. Lads, before we get into the game, something that is floating to the surface every year for the last 20 years, 30 years since I've been in existence is the provincial championships, and it links back. And why I'm asking, because of the magnitude of this game. Okay, I teach in Dublin. I work with so many lads from Westmeath and from Wexford and different counties. Okay, they think the provincial championships have had their day. Jim McGuinness has aired his views, and I think they're being maybe depreciated nationally. I know you put out a nice poll as well about it. I think they're being depreciated nationally for a number of reasons. I think my own issue with it is the link to the actual All-Ireland Championships itself and the carrot there. And maybe there's an apathy in, well, there is an apathy in Leinster and in Munster because it's been basic massacres for the last decade and a so or half, bar the odd uprising, such as Tipperary, etc. Carr, are you looking forward to the Ulster Championship, and can you separate it and isolate it from the wider landscape of what's happening nationally?
Yeah, well, look, I think everybody in Ireland is looking forward to Derry and Donegal. I think there are games within the provincial championship that still do it. A Galway Mayo Connacht final, if that happens, will still stoke the fires. There'll still be some smaller, but still an interest in Cork and Kerry always at the weekend because it's not quite as one-sided, even though it is in some ways. Like, at least Cork, for some recent history, have given Kerry a game where you think it could happen. So, but within that, like, I just think that the championship is at its best when the best teams play each other or teams of a similar level play each other. I think we're far too wedded. Like, Ulster, I get their protection of the Ulster Championship in some ways, but there's a wee bit of lack of ability to look beyond that and say, look, we're the problem here. The other three well, especially two. You could argue Connacht still living. The other two, Leinster and Munster, are completely stone dead as championships. And what it's actually doing now in the Titan season is making life very difficult for the team that wants to come out of Ulster and win in All-Ireland, because they have to get up so far and so often to win an Ulster championship. And then they have a round robin. And then they potentially have an All-Ireland preliminary quarter-final, and then a quarter-final, and then a semi-final, final. Whereas Dublin and Kerry start their season in a month's time. They can chill the beans and win their provincial title. And I just think that we're holding ourselves back a wee bit. We're being a wee bit insular. And also, for football as a whole, for the game, for the sport, it's not healthy to have this lull. The league has become a brilliant competition. People love the league. It's really competitive. Games are tight. They're well-matched teams. And then you get this lull for 4, 5, 6 weeks everywhere except, I mean, the lull so far in Ulster, even the first couple of weeks of Ulster have been poor. And now it's going to start this weekend, but it's a lot to wait for.
Martin, how did you feel as a player? And can I just say, my best ever memories following Donegal have been in Ulster. I know people will say, well, Croke Park. No, but I'm just talking about my formative years because we couldn't get to Croke Park. My worst day is Joe Brawley's goal against the aforementioned Derry 98 and the heartbreak. Ulster Championship was special. And I know as a player, obviously, you've won multiple Ulster Championships. It's amazing. But it's just that it's kind of isolating it from the rest. But what was it like as a player? Let's take 2013, for example. You're preparing for Tyrone in the first round of the Ulster Championship, okay? So when the league finishes, there's what, between a 3 to 5 week gap, whatever it was. It must be frustrating. You're getting emotionally, physically, and everything else up for that game, and you're watching teams in other provinces, and I know of a Texas before, that's the way it always has been. I know that. We know that. We know that. You have to emotionally get up for Tyrone, say, whenever it was, in early May, mid-May, whatever, late May. Other teams in other provinces, Kerry Dublin, for example, surely there's a thing about you getting to peak. It must be a huge help having to get the peak 8, 9 weeks later, Martin.
It was, like, from my point of view, when I was playing that Ulster Championship, massive. Like, it was really competitive. It was brilliant. You really looked forward to it every year, and you really wanted to try and win it. You know, it was the main thing at the start of the year, to try and win the Ulster Championship. But back then, you had 3 or 4 week breaks in between each game, so you were able to play the game, even go out and enjoy the victory or the defeat if it was, couldn't enjoy it, but you still went out and maybe had a few pints after it. Then that week, then you recovered, and then it was a 3 week build up into the next game. So there was a build up to it. Whereas now, you know, I definitely agree with Carla that the provincial championships are dead. Like, there's no build up to each game in between. You play Donegal or Derry, whoever wins this game, are out the following week, is it? Weekend.
Next Sunday.
There's no build up to that next game, or there's no time to recover. There's no time to even chat about the past game. I just think they're trying to cram something into the calendar and it's not working. Whereas back a couple of years ago, they had the time and the finals were in September and stuff, so you had a break in between. Yes, you're probably less likely to be more successful in the All-Ireland series after Ulster because it was so competitive and other teams were peaking for later in the year, whereas Ulster teams had to be peaking at the very start. You could have to play Tyrone, you play Armagh, play Monaghan, you know, 3 games before you've even got to an Ulster final, whereas you're picking up injuries and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Whereas the teams down the country, and particularly in Leinster and Munster, they were taking a couple of weeks break, going back and playing with their clubs in some cases, and then just timing it for end of July, start of August, you know what I mean? Whereas in Ulster, you had to be at peak in May and trying to keep that going throughout the season, which is very, very difficult. But the way they're doing it now, they're just making a mockery of it, to be honest. Like, playing it week in, week out, they're just trying to hold on to something, and I don't know if it's the right thing or not.
Yeah, you can see McGuinness's frustration, and he's alluded to that many times. It's just too quick, it's too fast. Definitely needs to be looked at. And as Cahir, to paraphrase, I suppose, Cahir is, you have a league, then you have the Ulster Championship, and it's almost stuck in the middle, Cahir, isn't it?
Totally, that's where it's at. It's this thing that, you know, the only reason that we have this new championship structure, which is definitely better than what we had before, is because there was the carrot given to the provincial councils of, look, we'll keep the provincials and we'll link it and we'll give the provincial winners and runners-up their seed one and two in the round robin stage, and that is the only reason that it got through Congress. So there's almost this, it's a political thing almost, trying to phase it out in a certain way, and almost, you know, it's a bit like the Tories in the NHS, almost break it down till it's completely unusable and unworkable, and it's, you know, then you just have to get rid of it at some point, and that's what I think that's the road we're heading with it.
Yeah, I think so, and it's because it's in a brilliant competition, and if Donegal beat Derry on Saturday night, I'd be the happiest man in the world, and equally, you'd be delighted, obviously, if Derry. When Cahir, just plagiarising your article, as I said, and I know, and I don't think you're playing the Kerry cute hoers, as they say, is use of a different phrase. You have said 4 months in advance, ever since, I suppose, the draw has been made in, what, late October, it feels about 15 years ago. You think, from a Derry point of view, okay, your own county, your native county, they're going for 3 in a row in Ulster. They were within a kick of a ball of an All-Ireland final last year. They're league champions. They beat Dublin. A remorseless machine, really, over the past couple of months. Leading on from last year, I was at that Kerry game last year. Thought Derry were the better team. However, you do think that this is a banana skin from a Derry point of view.
Yeah, totally. I think it's a massive banana skin. There's a whole load of elements that tie in with that. The only thing I would say on the flip side is that I think in every game since they beat Tyrone 2 years ago, when they've won the 6 Ulster Championship games they've played since that day, I think I've tipped Derry in all 6, and almost the reason every day was that Derry are the best team in Ulster. They're the best team in Ulster, and they're a very consistent team in terms of delivering a performance. Almost every big day they've gone out, they've delivered a performance, and that's what makes me think that at the very heel of the hunt, Derry will still find a way to get over this. But at the same time, a lot of the chatter is that Donegal are coming from a position of being massive underdogs, and, you know, wow, we haven't a chance, and we were down Division 2 and Sherlock last year was right off and all that. Like, and I've never, ever bought any of that. This is a squad of players, the vast majority of whom have a load of experience of big games, of Ulster finals. This is a county that was in 10 of the previous 12 Ulster finals before last year. Last year was a write-off. Last year was completely ground zero. I was just looking there, of the 2022 Ulster final, of Donegal's 15 starters, Michael Murphy's retired, and Owen McFadden Ferry is cruciate. The other 13 are still there. You know, you are looking at a Donegal team that took Derry to the wire that day. Now, Murphy in that is the big caveat. Last year was such a write-off that we don't really know in a big game how Donegal will fare without Michael Murphy to guide them through it. And that is to me the big question mark that hangs over them, because all the rest of it is still there. Football-wise, ability-wise, you know, it's there.
I would agree with most of that. And I'm going to get on to the tactical little layout in a minute. Martin, last year, Cahir's spot on. Last year was a write-off. We had the issues off the field. And the issues on the field, I suppose, there were injuries and there were players opting out, and that's all fair enough. But looking at it this year, Martin, just for anybody tuning in outside the county, so many players, as I said, were not available last year. It's actually happening this year, and it's all because of injuries, Martin. So we're inadvertently missing players, and I always need to read them out because, and as I said, anybody tuning in, maybe for the first time, players who've been injured and are out, there's question marks over this weekend. Brendan McCall, you know, huge player, fullback, Umban Gallagher, either cornerback, wingback, Paddy McBrearty or talisman, ace marksman, Ryan McHugh, 2 All-Stars, Dara O'Boyle, and Conor O'Donnell, who has been brilliant since he came into the Donegal jersey. And then you could add in, so that's what, McCall, Ban, McBrearty, McHugh, Darrell Boyle, Conor O'Donnell. Add in who's only returned, Niall O'Donnell, Michael Langan, your own club man, Jason McGee, Keelan McColgan. You're talking 8-9 players, Martin. This is my big kind of thing going into this one, and that they're not like squad players. These are our best players. We'll see maybe, hopefully, some of them this Saturday, but that must be hugely frustrating from McGuinness because, and I heard some of his interviews, and you know him, he's an amazing man, okay? But it must be frustrating he hasn't got everybody together. And if we're going even without, I named 8-9 of those guys, if you're going without 4 or 5 of them, it's a big ask.
Yeah, definitely. And I think from Jim's point of view, he would have wanted a lot of them to get a lot of football within the league and get a lot of training under their belt, you know? Once he was announced as manager, the excitement in Donegal was unbelievable. You know, Jim's back, county board is back, and seems to be moving well. You know, I know they have a lot of training done. You know, they have a lot of sessions done. They were away in a training camp, stuff like that there. But has 80-90% of that squad done all this training? You know what I mean? Have they been reaching 80-90% of the sessions? So that's one thing that Jim would have wanted. He would have wanted all them players to get as many minutes in the league as possible. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case. You know, Jason McGee, who would have been seen as one of our best players in midfield, you know, 6'7", who would be an ideal match for Conor Glass or Brendan Rodgers, you know, has he got the minutes in his legs? Going back to Jim's last term, you know, during the league when he came in, that kind of stuff, he would have played 17, 18 players. You know, that's really what he played regularly all the time. You know, so they were so comfortable in the game plan, so comfortable with what Jim wanted. Has he got time to do that? Has the players got the time on the pitch? That's why I think it's a very big ask for Donegal to go into Celtic Park, Derry's home pitch, because they're the complete opposite. They're 4 or 5 years down the line. And each one of them have played so many minutes in the league with very few injuries, you know, and they're so comfortable with what they're doing. Every man knows exactly what they're meant to be doing in the game plan. And each year they're adding one or two layers to that game plan, which is just making them a better team. And then the other thing that they have is they have Shane McGuigan, who's arguably one of the top three forwards in Ireland at the moment, you know, and to bring it to the next level, you need to have one of them. Like, if you looked at, say, when Donegal won the All-Ireland, you know, Murphy was one of the top forwards. Any of them other teams, Bernard Brogan, you know, Clifford, they all have that marquee forward. And Derry have that now in McGuigan. So I think they're a massive, it's going to be a massive challenge for Donegal to go in there, you know, into Celtic Park. The only thing, you know, you might think is maybe Derry are going to be a bit complacent. They've kind of cruised through the league a wee bit. They've won the league. Maybe they went away on a holiday there for a training camp. You don't know how, maybe they're getting ahead of themselves, stuff like that. But it will be very interesting on Saturday. Like, I'm really looking forward to it. It's probably the biggest Ulster game in the last couple of years, to be honest with you.
Okay, you said, I quote, "It would be different if they were in a position to let a chance like this go past and worry about bigger fish later on in the year, but they aren't. So they will bring something different." You're talking about Donegal here. The Donegal are they. "Something inventive, something troublesome. Look into your crystal ball. Tell us what you think Donegal are going to do differently against Derry on Saturday night."
Look, a crystal ball, trying to second guess what Jim McGuinness is going to do. Look, if we could do that, we'd all be in his shoes.
Well, we saw a huge high press in the game against Cork, right? And I think Jim might have been surprised himself. It almost went viral. Was it you to blame that put out that tweet and everybody then had it and was doing the wagons on social media? Didn't actually see a huge amount of that since press really, really high. I didn't see a huge amount of it anyway.
No, look, it's something that you're probably not going to do for 70 minutes in any game. I think I remember watching their game against Fermanagh on BBC, and in the first half they Donegal dropped really far off actually and sat way in and struggled and weren't particularly good, and then came out after the second half and did go with the press and kind of just out muscled Fermanagh and blew them away in a kind of similar way to what we saw Armagh do to Fermanagh at the weekend. I don't expect Donegal to come to Celtic Park on Saturday and start off with a high press. I think that would be asking for bother. I think they'll come in, they'll keep it really tight. And I think all that stuff at the start of the year, it's like everybody trying stuff out. I think it's good to have it in your locker for when you need it. If you're 4 points down with 20 minutes to go and you have to press, you know what you're doing. You're not just blindly pressing and starting to chase shadows, because a team like Derry would just rip that to shreds. With the runners particularly, you know, suppose the strength of the unspoken strength of Derry that doesn't really get an awful lot of attention is that there's an argument that Derry have the best half-back line in Ireland for the last 2 years. It's been phenomenal at times, and it doesn't get an awful lot of praise. It doesn't get an awful lot of attention, and I think they probably like it that way. But you take the versatility and the ability of Conor Doherty, Padraig McGrogan and Gareth McInnes. I mean, every one of those three could go and play full-back very comfortably. Every one of those three can score goals. Every one of those three can score points. Every one of those three are footballers. They are a fearsome unit of a half-back line. And I mean, imagine Donegal trying to press that, not knowing what they're doing. So, you know, it's all about just kind of laying. You ask me what Donegal are going to bring different, I don't know. The only thing that I could really see is that in some way they might try and attach themselves to Conor McCluskey, a big man against a smaller man, try and create some sort of a physical mismatch close to goal where they can maybe score goals off it. Derry are well rehearsed, they're well set up. And, you know, that versatility and that confidence in defence, we have seen Conor Doherty go and play a full-back in Croke Park. Gareth McInnes' championship debut was in that game we talked about in Celtic Park in 2014 where he marked Michael Murphy. He was brilliant. You know, Padraig McGrogan is probably an old-style centre-back in many ways, but he could easily slot any. He went in as a young lad and marked Conor McManus in the first semi-final up in Oma, in Armagh, and was really, really good on McManus that day. So, like, how you actually find the chinks of armour in Derry is not easy, and it is the one thing that just height-wise, they might, Donegal have a bit of height, they might be able to attach themselves and look for that.
Donegal did try to play Michael Langan and Hugh McFadden a couple of times in full forward throughout the league, you know, maybe in a bit of preparation for that, but it wasn't really that successful either at the same time, so I don't know if they had the same options maybe as they would have had when like Michael Murphy, who could win any ball, you know what I mean? It didn't really work to the same extent as back then. It's like Jim will definitely have something up his sleeve, like, but it's be intriguing to see what it is, because there's been very little word about it around Donegal, and as usual they keep their cards close to their chest. Like,
where do you even start with it, Martin? What do you think Donegal would do the first 20 minutes? And Donegal sit really, really deep. The old, going back 10, 15 years ago, first 20 minutes, try and have a 2-2 by 15 minutes, or can you see them going with this high press and try and turn it into chaos?
Well, I think the one thing that Jim has really stamped back on them is that their intensity in the tackle. You know, Donegal were defensive there for a couple of years, but they weren't really that defensive or that intense in the tackle. People were able to get runners through and stuff like that, you know, when they were creating gaps. Whereas under Jim now, again, they're back tackling like dogs, as I say, in groups and in packs and stuff. But in the Derry game, I think that they'll be very patient. They'll not want Derry to get any goals early on or get a couple of scores up. They'll want to slow the tempo way down. You know, it probably won't be pretty, probably won't be exciting. They'll want to try and get in half-time as close to Derry as possible and then let the Derry players start getting edgy, nervous, and hope that Donegal then will start chipping off scores. And that's one thing that they really, really are good at, is scoring from distance. You know what I mean? So with sending a couple of runners into the full forward line, kind of mirroring what Derry actually do. You know, Derry send a lot of boys into the inside line, or times they're playing with five inside, and then the likes of their half-back line were getting more space because their forwards and their midfielders were engaging the so-called blanket defences, and then they were topping up with scores and coming late with runners. And I think Donegal will actually do that there and try and get the likes of Kieran Thompson, the likes of Michael Langan, you know, boys like that are very comfortable shooting from 40 yards out. You know what I mean? Just so that they can have a bit more space and get the shot off by sending runners in deep and engaging Derry.
Yeah. Who's impressed you for Donegal this year? For me, the standout player that we didn't know, we knew about him from club level, but from, say, county level, Kieran Moore has just been a breath of fresh air, hasn't he, Martin? You would have come up against him at club level, and Keelan McGonigal at six, love it. I was actually on a podcast with Stephen O'Mara last year. He's worked with a number of county teams, and he actually said on the show last year, I'd love to see Keelan McGonigal at six. He actually worked with Donegal as well. He says, I think he'd be a great six. I think he's an incredible six. No, but a lot of the others, but Moore's been accepting. You talk about players that are versatile and can play in different positions. Moore can just pretty much do anything. And another thing, talk about positions meaning nothing. I know that's a phrase that's commonly used now as well. Shane O'Donnell at number seven the last day, like, yeah. Unreal.
Yeah, it's really have stamped their own on them positions. Like, in fairness, Kieran Moore was the player of the championship last year, you know, in my opinion. I know they didn't win the championship, but any time I've seen him play, we played them down in Dunfanaghy, and he was the best player on the pitch by a mile. Like, you know,
really,
you're expecting, yeah, and you're expecting like Niall and all these boys, but Kieran was the best standout player. He's so athletic. You know, he could play wing forward, wing back, full back. He's in playing full back now, midfield. He's very similar to like Rory Cadza, you know, the way he covers the ground, you know, big stride and comfortable on the ball. So he's been really stand out for Donegal, and he's been a great find. And, you know, Jim has a knack of doing that, like finding players that got there. He has a kind of a prototype, you know, as in that he wants them athletic to cover the ground, and then he'll mould them into footballers, and that's exactly what he's done with Kieran Moore, you know. Shane O'Donnell, who we all know, Shane and Niall O'Donnell are fabulous footballers. It was just getting them consistently in training, consistently in the squad to get playing. It's very good to see Michael Langan back and injury free. He's still improving every game. You know, there's still far more in him. He's super talented. But from Donegal's point of view, it's kind of been disappointing that they haven't been able to get the likes of Owen Bann and Jason McGee more game time in that, because they're the real players that you can really pin your hopes on. You know, I like, they all talk about the Derry's midfield and Glass and Bryn Rodgers. Like, I think every bit, if you had Michael Langan and Jason McGee, that they would have no problem competing with them. Like, because that is as good a midfield as you get in Ireland if they had the minutes and playing together regularly. But as you say, that's the kind of players that I've been impressed with, Shane O'Donnell and Shane Moore. Like.
Yeah, there's a huge pace there. And just even watching them in Croke Park the last day, you've Pádraig Mógán, Shane O'Donnell, Kieran Moore, Keelan McCaughan. We talk about transitions, we talk about linking defence to attack. I'd love to see Owen Bann back there as well, because he would be massive. I actually think that if this Donegal team get to Croke Park, the full team, forget about at any stage, with a full team, I actually think they're going to be seriously dangerous. I think the pace is frightening, but unfortunately, we're just not seeing it.
Well, that's it. See, for talent-wise and player-wise, you know, the Donegal are up there with the best in Ireland. You know, it's just about getting them consistently out. And I think the thing I think that's going to be a downfall for Donegal is that they haven't got them together consistently. And it's been stop-start. You know, the likes of Owen Bann's been injured. These boys haven't got three or four games in the league in a row that allowed them to build. And it's very hard to go in straight into a championship match after not coming off a couple of league matches at the end. And that's one big advantage that Derry have. They're so used to playing each other. They've played the four or five games in the trot in the league, building up. They got basically a championship game against Dublin in the league final. So they're well prepped for this. Whereas Donegal, I know they played Armagh and that, but we don't actually know what Donegal's best team is and how many players they have available.
Yeah. Cathair, just quickly, on kickouts, Martin, I know you have training. Cathair, you may need to go as well. What are we going to see from the kickouts from both sets? Are we going to see anything different, or are we going to see both teams pushing high? There'll be no giving up the kickouts here, Cathair, will there?
I wouldn't think so, no. I don't think there'll be much concession, because to concede the kickout to Derry would, again, I think they would run out over the top of you. If you give them free possession, now there is a danger. We saw what happened to Dublin when they put on the big squeeze as well, and something that they, again, different facets, they have probably improved on their long kick out, which had been an issue in the All-Ireland semi-finals against Galway and Kerry both. We saw the long kick out be very effective in that league final against Dublin, and they created goal chances off it. So Donegal will obviously have taken a study on that and have weighed that up, but I still think they'll go after the Derry kick out because they'll feel that they're big enough around the middle to at least compete and, you know, to not give free ball and handy ball and let themselves be caught in behind. So, yeah. And look, Sean Patton is, if the right patterns are at play, if Donegal can move men about and create situations, then Sean Patton is some weapon because he will find them. You know, the trajectory and the accuracy and the length on his kick is just frightening. And, you know, he's a real threat. It's funny to say that about a goalkeeper, like, but he can create a goal scoring opening. I remember the goal against Tyrone and the real whip COVID day. My God, remember his kick out over the top. I think Pádraig Mógán must have kicked the 80 yards into Pádraig Mógán's run. Like, that's what he can do. So I think Derry will go after them too. So
key matchups, Cathair, before we get your predictions.
We're talking about, so is Brent McCall fit? Because obviously he hadn't done too badly on Ian McGuigan in a couple of meetings. He'd be the obvious choice there. Kieran Moore did well in the league final against Mernon. I think that league final would have settled Donegal minds a wee bit in terms of having to throw Kieran Moore into that role if he's needed, because in McGuigan, to be fair, from 2022, McGuigan's a very different player. He's a much, much better forward now than he is. And then I suppose on the other side, it's what Donegal do. Last year in Ballybuffet, they kind of had a mix and match system on Rodgers. They were worried about Rodgers, and when Derry had the ball, one bam, picked Rodgers up in open play. Now, do they do something like that again to crack Rodgers' legs? And then I was talking about Donegal trying to attach themselves to Conor McCluskey in terms of a height battle, and for that reason, and for the fact that he was the only one that got a handle on Oisin Gallen last year. And I know there would be a wee maybe concern about, will Gallen track him? Will Gallen have the legs to track him for 70 minutes? I think you could see Conor McCluskey on Oisin Gallen potentially, even though it's a wee bit of a physical mismatch. I think Derry might take a chance on that one and see does it work out in their favour.
Okay, fair enough. Right, last one, I promise, before the game. So what kind of game is it going to be overall, Cahir?
It'll probably be very tight and probably quite slow in the first half as both teams feel it out a wee bit. They'll not want to lose it at that period. And then, I mean, then it depends what way it breaks out. If either team gets a goal, gets a 3-4, 5-point lead, then the game naturally stretches and
we're not seeing chaos. We're not thinking chaos then.
I think that'd be a big mistake on Donegal's part to try and invite a game of chaos on that Derry team at the minute. I think Derry would be too good at chaos for them. I think it'll be tighter, and I think that'll allow Donegal the opportunity to bring whatever surprise they have in store, because they will have one, to bring whatever surprise they have. It's no good bringing it in a game where you've conceded 2-17 anyway. You know, you have to bring that in a game that you're going to win, and they're not going to win a game that they concede 2-16 or 2-17 in.
No chaos for you, Martin? You're nodding along with Cahir.
I don't think there'll be any chaos. They'd be mad. Like, you know, that's the last thing they want. And sometimes in chaos, you could end up down a couple of scores very quick, and Derry will just tear that up. Like, that's their bread and butter, you know. I do think Donegal might target, try and get maybe a goal from the restarts. You know, Wolf Patton's long kickouts and a couple of runners onto the likes of Pattern Mogan and Shane O'Donnell and boys. You know, Lynch does come out trying to block up that last line of defence, like zonally kind of. So there is an opportunity maybe to try and get a goal on the break quick off the restarts that way. Like, I think there is, can be joy there. And for Donegal to get a victory, I think they definitely need to get a goal on it. It's going to be very tight and it's going to be very exciting. Like, but if it's hectic and that, it's definitely going to suit Derry down to the ground. Like,
I promise, the last one before the predictions. Martin, what are those dressing rooms like an hour before throwing? Something that, could I please get invited into one something? I'd love to witness an inter-county one where it's just before you go out in the pitch with that team huddle. I imagine Derry, Donegal, they're all the same, Tyrone, Dublin. What is it like in those champ? Because I know I'm totally contradicting myself. We're on with the Ulster Championship and that, but on Saturday night, it's the Lions' Den. It is going to be an amphitheatre. It's going to be brilliant. What's it like as a player in those final moments?
It's actually very calm, you know, at times. You know, you're right, early enough, maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours before. Like, I know the last time we played in Celtic Park, we would actually stayed in Redcastle Hotel the night before, like, which is, you know, it's only over the road, but we would have stayed the night before the game, and then you did all your talking in hotel in the morning of the games, you know, and then you're just 5 minute drive into the pitch. It was great. So, and you had all the work done, everyone knew the matchups, everyone knew the roles. And then you just relax, there's music playing.
Are you relaxed? Really?
Yeah, relaxed. You know, you're not too bad. You get out onto the warm-up and you're trying to be focused to try and get as best ability and make sure that it's a good warm-up, you know, that you're not dropping balls and people's not all over the place. They're really switched in on the task at hand, as they say. And then once you go out onto the pitch then, just before the throw-in, the 15, 20 minutes before the throw-in, now that's mad. Like, it's really cold when you go out and there's really noise and you can hear the bands and all that kind of stuff, like the music. So there's a real buzz then, like, and then it just, once it kicks in, then once the match starts, you don't really notice anything. You know, you just notice the players around you. You're trying to keep going back to the game plan and keep thinking, I need to go back to that. But it's exciting. Like, that's one thing you would miss, like, and especially in Celtic Park, there is it is really tight and they're in compact and top. You can hear everything that's going on.
What would be considered a successful year one for Jim McGuinness?
Well, they've kicked off the first thing they wanted. They wanted promotion back to Division One, you know. In some ways, it's kind of Donegal would be mad they won the Ulster title. There's no doubt about it. It's not the end of the world if they don't win. You know, they've a long break then into the next round. You know, the three or four weeks.
Yeah, whoever loses, I think it's the 18th of May. Whoever loses.
18th of May.
Yeah.
So that's reeled back into Jim's old way. You know, he had three or four weeks before the games, really prepare, hopefully get more players back. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get beat, but if they did get beat, it's not the worst case scenario. You could end up in an All-Ireland quarterfinal, semi-final, very handy. You know what I mean? So although they'll want to lay down a marker to show that they're capable of beating one of the top teams in Ireland, it's not the worst case scenario if they get beat either. And that's why I think that the Ulster Championships are dead in the water too, because teams will be thinking that way.
Yeah, and no, someone from Donegal supporter told me to actually shut up during the week. I was like, if we lose, could still have a really good year in there. What are you talking about? I was like, yeah, but objectively speaking, surveying it on the helicopter, the reality is whoever loses, Monaghan can still have a good year after losing to Cavan. That's just the nature of the new championship.
The nature of it. Yeah. Like you could beat Derry and end up in a worse position than if you could beat the Derry, which is why the provincial thing has kind of gone. As long as you're playing the Sam Maguire, it's the same thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Martin, prediction?
I think if it's tight and Donegal get a goal in the first half and they're going in close, I think Donegal can come out on top. But if Derry turn up at all and play the same way they're playing, haven't got ahead of themselves, aren't thinking on winning All-Irelands already, Derry will win. But Donegal really need Derry to underperform, and they need to be at their top. So from that point of view, I think Derry will win.
Cahir?
Yeah, I think Derry will find a way. I think it'll be very tight. I think there'll be a premium on goal chances because both teams will be so scared of conceding a goal to the other. Derry have scored 16 goals. Sorry, you asked me about key matchup. Derry have scored 16 goals this year. Ethan Doherty has had a hand in 11 of them.
Wow.
You know, he is the, and I don't think he scored one of them. I don't think he scored any of them himself. He's assisted 7 and had the second last pass on another 4. So, like, you have to shut that down. He's so good linking that backdoor cut. He's so good at cutting his angle in off that wing, and then he'll just pop the pass. He's the most unselfish footballer. He will just gladly make his run, take the ball at real pace, pop a man in, and you wouldn't even know he's doing it, but he's so good at it, and it's very, very hard to mark. I've watched him, I've studied him for a piece a few weeks ago, like, and the way that he is able to contort his body to go left or right off either foot at the drop of a hat. As a defender, he's bound to be just an absolute nightmare to try and cope with, because he can go inside you, he can go outside you. He's so quick and so direct. So, and for that reason, I think there are more goals in Derry. And if there's a goal in the game, you have to surmise that it's going to come Derry's way some road. But again, that goes back to what does Jim have in the box that we don't know about, that he's going to throw out on Saturday evening. And that's the excitement in it. That's the bit that I'm looking forward to really seeing. I want to see what Donegal bring to it, because then we'll know where they are. We know where Derry are. And I think Donegal are in for a serious summer. I think Donegal are going to be in the depths of the championship one way or another. And it's just, we'll know how close they are to it by 8 o'clock on Saturday.
And as I said, we're going now, lads. And as Martin and myself were just discussing there, would you go along with that? Because, again, if Donegal wins Saturday night, we're all delighted. And I know somebody will say, now what do you think of the Ulster Championship? And it doesn't take away the overall point. Would you go along with that, though? Whoever does lose, say it's 116 to 114. Now, a hammering or something like that for either side, obviously the narrative is slightly, you know, the rhetoric going forward might be a little bit different. If it's a cracker of a game and it's 116 to 114 either way, the losers can still go and have a good year. Because of the new structure.
Oh, totally. Like, it's a mindset thing. As you say, if you have that month to wait in between, like, 2014, go back to that game. Derry were coming off the back of a league final, got an awful trouncing from Dublin in the league final, but things were on a general high. That day in Celtic Park, if you remember, Derry were in a good position just before half-time and Donegal were completely exposed, and Niall Hawley went to lift the ball. He was clean through and goal and he didn't get the ball up. And if Derry had scored a goal at that time, they'd probably beat Donegal. Donegal beat them well in the second half. The qualifier was a month later against Longford. By that time, Derry had lost half their team and got beat by Longford in the first round of the qualifiers because the mindset was just, that is the year over. That's it now. We've lost to Donegal. That's it. Gone. And I think that both teams will have moved on an awful lot from that, and we'll see that regardless, as you say, unless it's a 10-point hide in either way, which I don't see, they'll be strong enough mentally, the both of them, to come out of it and have 4 weeks to get gathered up and say there's still a big summer left for us. I actually think that's easier for Donegal to do as well than it is for Derry, because at this point in their journey, as we talk about, a performance for Donegal and to give Derry a real rattle would only increase their confidence levels, even if they lose it.
Cathal O'Kane, Martin McElhenney and Paddy McGill on this week's Donegal GAA podcast. Saturday's match will be live on Ocean FM from 6:15, courtesy of Donegal Plumbing and Heating, Old Lahey Road in Donegal Town. A reminder, finally, this programme is available as a podcast each week on oceanfm.ie and wherever you get your podcasts. We're back next week, same time, same place.